Today on Older and Wiser,
we'll reveal how many of us don't know the name of a single one of our neighbors.
We've got a list of the surprising things people steal from hotel rooms and the most popular ways of injuring yourself during the winter months.
Plus, how what you order at Starbucks can reveal things about your personality.
You're listening to Older and Wiser. Hey folks, I'm Bob Bates in Los Angeles, along with Susan Sikora. As always, we're sort of rummaging through public opinion surveys. So let's get started. Our first one is actually from a British publication, but I think it does apply to us here in the United States. And it's about neighbors and how well we know our neighbors or don't know our neighbors. Susan, growing up there in New Jersey where you did, I bet you knew everybody on the street.
Not only on my block, but on the block in back of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, everybody knew everybody. You're right.
We lived on the cul-de-sac, and of course, we knew every neighbor. They were in and out of our house. We were in and out of theirs. 60 years later, we again live on a cul-de-sac, interestingly. And I know my neighbors across the street, but I can barely give you the names of the other people, much less be able to relate a conversation I've had with them. How is it where you live?
I don't know a lot of people here. I'm in an apartment complex now. And by first name, I know the gal across the hall, whom I do not see very often. I think her schedule is different than mine. I'm retired. She probably goes to work. And there's a guy upstairs that I see. And I know them both by first names.
Yeah.
But other than that,
You're doing okay, though, since you've only lived there a month or so.
Yeah. But do I know them well? Do I have coffee with them? Do I hang out with them? No.
Do you think it's a function of the fact that we move so much in this society, that we're always changing cities?
I think that's a big measure of it. I think, you know what I think it is? Years ago, my husband and I lived in the Virgin Islands, and I was teaching in the Catholic school there. And I noticed that after a while, it happened where I would get friendly with somebody, and then they wouldn't come back. And I thought, I don't want to do this anymore.
The neighbors are always rotating out. Right.
It's like a kick in the stomach, not by them, but by the fact that people were not staying there very long. And I was there for a while. And so, you know, after a while, you think, oh, what's the point? I'm going to make friends with somebody and they're going to leave. I think that we move so many times. It's like, what's the point of getting all involved? Because, you know, something's going to change either with us or with them.
According to this new survey of 2,000 adults, 75% say they consider their neighbors mere acquaintances at best. So
at best.
I think that's probably not too surprising. 56% say they have absolutely no interest in getting to know who lives next door. 56%. You just don't care. Is that part of it? We don't care. Like, what have we got to gain by getting to know the neighbors?
Well, I'm going to give you the other factor I think that's working here. And that is that people are on devices so much that even if you're not, I am not on a device all the time. And you and I have talked about
I know
about
you're going to complain about devices, but you're at.
No. But wait, here's the point. If somebody who lives next door to me is on a device all the time, they're not kind of reaching out, being open enough to maybe, or I don't see them. Let's talk about the interaction, the traffic first.
Well, I think I think what you're trying to say is it's a matter of the fact that we needed to reach out to other humans when we lived in that little cul-de-sac when we were growing up. And now we can reach out to our friends in faraway places electronically.
Right. And I think our sense is we don't need to reach out to the person next door. I don't happen to agree with that, but I think that's what's at play here.
You know, one of the times in which you really need your neighbor is during an emergency.
Yes.
And I think there are many times when people realize that there's an earthquake or there's a fire in the building or something. And for the first time in 30 years, they meet the person upstairs or the person next door and they didn't know. They're kind of nice. Gee, it was kind of good to meet you. You think that happens?
Yeah. Yes. Somebody pulled a fire alarm during the Christmas holidays. I think a kid did. And it was a false alarm, thank heaven. But everybody was out and looking and talking to each other and saying, you know, what is it? And somebody said, oh, I think a kid. So, but I didn't say, and by the way, what is your name? It was just, had I been out there for a while, had I had to stay out of my apartment, maybe.
Yeah.
Then you would have had the time and the interaction. But
there's a real advantage to knowing your neighbors. According to this survey, one in six are still a part of a local neighborhood safety watch group. People living in rural areas were slightly more likely to have friends in their neighborhood than city dwellers. Surprised?
Not really, and I'm not sure why. Unless if you were, you know, 3 miles from your nearest neighbor, or let's say even a mile, if there were a fire or something, it would probably behoove you to know who they are in case there was something going on.
I'd feel a lot safer out in the countryside knowing who lives a mile away, just to, in case of an emergency.
The distance adds time to whatever help you need to get.
That's true. One in five of the respondents to this survey said they have been asked to feed one of their neighbor's pets while they were away. Have you ever asked a neighbor to feed your little cat?
In other places I've lived, yes.
But not,
I lived in a neighborhood years ago in Fairfax and California, and that was, to me, it was the best little street in America.
And people would help you out?
Well, not only that, I mean, my joke used to be everybody knew what everybody else's bathrobe looked like, because if you went out to get your mail in your bathrobe, nobody cared. It was a little cul-de-sac, and a lot of the same people are there. But again, that has changed, too. So,
that's funny. Everyone knows each other's bathrobe.
Yeah, 39%
of those surveyed here said they've taken the trash out for a resident. 10% have gone food shopping, and 23% have watered a neighbor's plants. Here's our next survey. This one comes from Fodors. I had to look up how to pronounce Fodors. F-O-D-O-R-S. You know, the travel company? Those travel people? I thought it might have been Fodors or Feuders or whatever, but it's just simply Fodors. And here's the headline. These are the items people love to steal from hotels. Have you ever stolen anything from a hotel?
No, and I have to give you full disclosure. My husband worked as a hotel manager for many years, both in the Virgin Islands and then here in the States.
He should know. What did people steal? He's probably got he probably had the list in his head.
The same things. Everybody, bathrobes was the big one, especially if you had a nice one. Mm-hmm. Towels was the big one too.
What about hangers? They really did a crazy thing some years back with the hangers. You know, they put the little locking device on the on the rod.
I would not have taken anything, because first of all, I don't think it's right. Number one, and number two, if I did, and my husband saw me trying to cram a bathrobe into my suitcase, not that I would be able to, because I'm sure wherever we stayed, we shopped. But
you had
put that back. What are you doing?
When your husband's head of the hotel, you have a little special problem and a special advantage. He could probably sneak you one out really easily.
Yeah.
According to this study of about 1,100 hotel operators, and these are 4- and 5-star hotels. So these are some of the bigger companies who have the nicer amenities. Mm-hmm. Like you said, towels number one, bathrobes number two, hangers number three. People also took pens, but aren't you allowed to take the pen?
I don't think a pen counts. I mean, a pen, they're not putting, you know, fabulous, wonderful pens in there from, you know, Tiffany's or something.
They also list cutlery, like if you had room service and you take home the knives and forks.
Most
of the time it doesn't matter, but you know, in some of these nicer hotels, the cutlery that comes with room service is actually sometimes nice. It's sometimes like heavyweight.
It is, but see, if you get it home, first of all, it's not going to match, so that's a big thing with me.
Well, if you go to the hotel enough, you could get a whole set.
Well, guess what? just go to Costco and get a deal. Seriously.
Do you think in the kitchen they keep track of how many plates they got back from each room and how many knives and forks?
I don't think somebody does. No, it depends on. It depends on who's running the thing,
maybe.
Ultimately.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I think they just shove all the plates and everything in a pile and say, if we lose them, we lose them. That's what I bet. One of the problems with stealing things from hotels and then bringing them to your home is that you're revealing to all your friends that you're a thief, basically. I mean, you're kind of showing your hand, right? So that's not good.
I think that's true. They don't match. And then what you have at home is something taking up valuable cupboard space in your kitchen with a bunch of glasses that don't match. And after a while, it's not cute anymore.
I guess some of these thieves can be pretty bold about it, though. According to this article, people have actually stolen mattresses from...
How the heck do you leave them? How do you... Excuse me. Don't you think someone will notice you leaving with a mattress?
Well, two things could happen. One, if it was like a subpar hotel where there's an exit and you got a couple people and you had a truck and
you're talking about a motel.
Motel, more or less, yeah. If you left at 2 in the morning or something and there was only one guy at the front desk, I guess you could probably get out. How aggressively do you think hotels pursue people who steal stuff? If they try to put it on the bill, which is possible, they could just say, bathroom's missing, $75. Mm-hmm. Boom.
Yeah, they might.
Or do they go, well, this is a very good customer, we're just going to ignore it. I bet it's a case by case decision.
Where we lived, the hotel was Frenchman's Reef in the Virgin Islands, and they had a snow scraper, which was practical. And on it, it said, and I quote, because this was brilliant. I don't know who wrote it, but it was brilliant. It said, "When ice and snow do give you grief, remember us at Frenchman's Reef."
That's great.
And so while you're scraping the ice in the morning, you're thinking, I really need to get away and go to the Virgin Islands where it's nice and warm and 80 degrees and I'm not fighting snow and ice here.
What a great idea.
Was a creative way to do it.
Absolutely.
Mean, it's not the same as a bathtub, but it's something you'll use. It's easy to pack and you can take it.
You're meant to take it. A very, very, very clever idea. Frenchman's Reef. I wonder if they still do that. That's a very cute idea.
That's a brilliant idea, I think. Now, wait a minute. I noticed in this survey you sent me, I have to bring this up. Somebody removed the seat from a hotel toilet? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, what would be the advantage of that? First of all, toilet seats aren't very expensive. I mean, you can buy one for $20, I think.
Yes.
So.
And I'm sure in a great, you know, five-star hotel, they're scrubbed with an inch of their lives and replaced on maybe a yearly basis. That said.
But.
And if you really need a new toilet seat, I don't think this is the top of the line item that you need to trek back in your suitcase somewhere from anywhere. I don't care if it's the next state or the next town.
No.
Go buy one.
I know. That's the worst idea of all.
All right.
Let's move on to our next topic. Here's the headline. Half of Americans can't have a positive morning without coffee, according to the study. I don't think you need a study to tell me that people like coffee.
No, I don't even know why anybody studied this. I could have done. Of course, if you're not drinking coffee in the morning, you're working on two cylinders, I think. At least I am.
According to the survey of 2,000 adults, 4 in 5 said their morning cup of coffee is essential to them to stay positive and to stay productive throughout the day. I can go through an entire pot of coffee in a day, and I find myself pretty jittery.
I make a pot that suits me. It says 6 cups. It's not really. It's 2, maybe 2.5. I have those, and then I'm done for the day. I don't drink coffee all day long.
Now, this other survey of 2,000 Americans, I don't know why they're always sampling exactly 2,000 Americans, but they are. For some reason, this other survey sort of examined the personality traits of people based on how they like their coffee, you know, whether you want it black or with sugar or with milk. And that apparently says something about your personality. First of all, I don't believe this to be true at all.
No, I don't either. This to me seems like a very strange and thin survey. This is like we have to do a survey to justify our paychecks this month, and we're almost over with the month, and we have to do something quick. So come up with something.
Well, that's what we do here. We trade in thin surveys. So that's our deal. So
that's us.
Moving on with that survey. The people who prefer just milk in their coffee were more likely to be diplomatic, and they like dogs and cats equally. Mm. So milk, just milk, I guess that's me. I like just milk in my coffee, and I think I'm diplomatic.
I mean, yeah.
Do you like dogs and cats equally, or do you like,
no.
I like cats more.
I like them well, but I'm a cat person, totally.
Yeah. So they're a little wrong on me and on you. Yeah. Black coffee drinkers stand alone as the group most likely to name winter as their favorite season.
I don't see the connection. I'm sorry.
So if you like your coffee black, you might be more of a gloomy guy who likes the winter months the most.
I don't know. I would think if you liked hot chocolate, you liked winter. I don't get this. I really don't get the survey. The more you tell me about this survey, the less I trust it. But go ahead.
People who prefer their coffee black or with sugar are more likely to be Tauruses, while people who like to add milk are more likely to be Aries.
What in the name of, I don't know what, has this got to do with your astrological sign?
How about this? 3 in 5 people who like milk in their coffee like watching Game of Thrones.
Those who take
sugar in their coffee prefer something lighter like Mrs. Maisel.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're really stretching it here, aren't we?
Who did this one? The New York Post? Guess what? We're even talking about them.
It was a company called OnePoll, but OnePoll will do surveys for any company you want, so they're pretty much in the market of doing surveys. According to this, what's your astrological sign?
And I can tell you. My astrological sign is Sagittarius.
Okay, so let's see what you apparently, according to them, you like your coffee with milk and sugar, which is true.
Sort of, if you count the creamer as, because
that's,
it's sweet.
It counts. No, it totally counts.
Sugar factor, kind of.
Exactly. There's no accounting here for creamer. Okay, so let me see. I'm Cancer, so it says I like it black with sugar. No. No sugar. I like milk. So I should, by rights, be a Virgo or an Aquarius. I could be Virgo or an Aquarius with coffee and milk.
So what are you going to do, change your sign?
Okay. I think we can, if we had a buzzer, we would push it now and say that was a bad survey.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our final survey. Let's hope it's a little better than the last one.
And so cheerful,
this last one. This survey reveals the top winter injuries and sources of pain for Americans. Oh, wonderful. This is what hurts us during the winter months. A new survey from the University of St. Augustine for Health Services found that half of Americans experience pain during the winter, and then they have a list of the main things that hurt us. Okay, here we go. Shoveling snow.
We're in California, it doesn't count. And that's why we're in California, by the way.
Yeah. But, you know, shoveling snow is really a bummer. And if you've shoveled snow, you know that it looks all light and fluffy, but when you put a big snow shovel under it and try to lift it, it's heavy. That snow can be very heavy. And if you're going down a driveway or a sidewalk and you're lifting repeatedly over and over, you could end up with some muscle pain. And I understand that it's one of the top things that gives people heart attacks in the winter.
That's right, because people don't exercise all year long. Then they go out and they think they're going to clear the walk, and it's more than they've had, and it's stress on their heart, and it's probably not a good thing to do anyway. So, no.
No. Long rides in cars, planes, or airplanes, 30% of people have that problem. It hurts them when they do that.
Well, because they're sitting too long, probably.
How are you on planes? Do you have to get up and walk around? Do you worry about...
I haven't been on one in a long time because of various personal issues going on, and things that have kept me here. But when I'm on a plane, I try to sit on the end and walk because my back has had issues in the past years.
Yeah. Also, older people can get clots in their legs if they don't get up and walk around on a long flight. Cooking holiday meals makes people hurt. Why would that make you hurt?
I don't cook.
Okay, so we got by that one then.
That's it. Go ahead.
Decorating the house for the holidays.
All right, that one might get me every now and then.
Yeah, you get up on a ladder. Yeah, that's not good.
I'm more careful about it now. I try not to do things that need a ladder. If I don't, where's plan B? I do things more simply. I put out less stuff. I think, you know, years ago, you and your lovely wife came to my home before you had kids. And I mean, every surface was decorated.
First of all, you're a great decorator, and your home was a Christmas paradise. And my kids couldn't stop talking about it for weeks after. What a charming, cozy, lovely, homey, Christmassy home that you have.
Well, too bad you don't live next door, because you could have half the stuff I could have just given to you. Said, come over and pick it up, because I really got rid of a lot.
So here are the most common winter injuries. 25% have back pain, 21% neck pain, 18% knee joint pain, and 17% bruises. Can we talk about bruises? I don't know about you, but as I've gotten older, all it takes is just for me to back into a table leg or bump into a wall or something, and I end up with a big bruise. How do you get bruises?
I get a bruise here and there, and I'm thinking, where did that come from? And I think it's because I either I'm not paying attention or it didn't hurt that much. And yeah, I do find some bruises here and there. Not tons. I'm not covered in them. But, you know, once in a while, if I'm moving a table over or something, even a little coffee table or something like that.
I never used to have that trouble. But now I was out. Well, I was walking around by the side of the house. We have a gate with a bracket on the side. And I just walked by it. I didn't even hit it that hard, but it kind of hurt, and I realized that's going to make a mark, and sure enough, I ended up with a big bruise there.
Yeah, back pain for me.
Back pain is one of the most common things people suffer from, and the hardest thing to correct. Like, it's very hard to go to the doctor and say, fix my back pain.
One of the things they do tell you, and I'm not giving out medical advice here, obviously check with your doctor. However, a lot of these things come from sitting too long. And sometimes when you get older or you're not working and you're retired and you're sitting there watching TV, and it's especially if you're in a colder climate too, it's cold outside, I don't want to go outside and slip on the ice or anything. You're sitting and the sitting is not good. You have to move.
Absolutely right. Got to move. Got to get up and move around. Yeah. It's that solves a lot of our wintertime aches and pains.
Right.
Well, on that note, we got to wrap things up, Susan. And as always, I got to ask you for your final thought of the day.
Here it is. Next time you're at the hotel, leave the toilet seat where it is.
Okay. Listen, folks, thanks for joining us. We're glad you could be with us for all the stuff that matters when you're 50 plus or beyond even. Check us out at olderandwiser.com, and we will see you next.